All right, we're back. And here, listening to NATO Solidarity News, I have Dan with me right now, who's going to bring out some news items that we that's concerning all the Red Nation.
Thanks, Sirkar. So the first announcement is a call-out from a member of the Cheam Nation. It reads, "Recently, there have been several articles in the papers regarding Cheam and fishing. Most of this is racial profiling and propaganda that, in most cases, the media is only talking to one side and not to the Cheam people. It has been the experience in the past couple of years that the media is not interested in hearing our side, nor are they willing to print our story. I'm not sure what measures to take to combat the racism that is being used in the media and the unfair treatment that we are receiving from the government representatives, especially the DFO officers who have been able to come to our community and on the river in a very aggressive manner and get away with it, while our people get hauled away to jail and spend months and even years in court with charges of assault and obstruction. As one of our community members said today, they are picking us off one at a time. I'll try to get some information out in regards to the situation here. Any suggestions or recommendations would be really appreciated. In my mind, it seems that only direct action will work. You can reach me at this email address." And it the email address at which you can contact the Cheam Nation for suggestions or recommendations on how to support, or just to let them know that you're there, that you're listening, and that you'll help them out. The email address for that is junequip@hotmail.com. That's JUNEQUIPP@hotmail.com. Or there's a phone number as well, and that's 604-794-5715. Once again, the number to call to support folks in the Cheam Nation is 604-794-5715. And that was from a press release. The next news article comes from the Associated Press. "The U.S. federal government will hold three hearings in October to gather public comment and suggestions on a proposal by the Makah Nation to resume hunting gray whales in waters off their reservation at the tip of the Olympic Peninsula in Washington State. The meetings are part of a review required under federal environmental law that will eventually lead to publication of an environmental impact statement on the hunting of the National Marine Fisheries Service. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals Court ruled last year that the Makah, although there is an 1855 treaty specifically allowing continued whaling, must comply with the environmental law and obtain a waiver from the National Marine Fisheries Service before it can proceed with a hunt. The Makah tribe killed one gray whale in the spring of 1999 under an Aboriginal subsistence quota granted to the United States by the International Whaling Commission. The tribe has done no hunting since then, due in part to ongoing litigation. The decision to resume hunting after the recovering gray whale population was taken off of the endangered species list drew heated opposition from some hippie-ass animal rights groups. The blatantly racist Sea Shepherd Conservation Society maintained a presence at Nia Bay for months before the hunt. The Makah are proposing to harvest as many as 20 gray whales during a five-year period. There will be a series of public meetings held in Seattle to discuss the issue further. Details about the meetings will be posted at the Gray Whale Link website at www.nwr.noaa.gov by mid-September. Written or electronic messages are encouraged. They must be received no later than October 24th. Again, the website is www.nwr.noaa.gov. Somebody's just trying to call the station, but we can't take the call while we're on air. So if you could call again during music, then we can hopefully get some information to you or help you out. And if you ever do want to call NATO Solidarity News and get more information, you can call us in studio at 398-4616, or you can call the CKUT Community News Collective at 398-6788. So our next piece of news comes from Indian Country Today. And a United Nations Committee on Racial Discrimination has asked the United States to respond to the Western Shoshone appeal for urgent intervention regarding the attack on their spiritual and cultural areas by the United States and mining corporations. The committee pressed the United States for an explanation of expanded mining and nuclear waste storage on Western Shoshone ancestral land, and for placing the land up for auction for privatization, and that's a quote. Further, the committee questioned whether the Treaty of Ruby Valley of 1863 has been abrogated, and the imposition of grazing fees, trespass and collection notices, horse and livestock impoundments, and restrictions on hunting and fishing. Western Shoshone lands cover approximately 60 million acres stretching across what is now referred to as the states of Nevada, Idaho, Utah, and California. The United States claims about 90% of the land base is public, or federally controlled lands. Western Shoshone challenged the United States' assertion of ownership, saying that there has never been a legally valid transfer, sale, or cession of land by the Western Shoshone. The United States was asked to report to the UN Committee on the rests of Western Shoshone while using lands claimed as their ancestral lands. Further, the United States was asked how it deals with sacred lands and whether it ensures effective participation by indigenous communities in decisions affecting them. The United States was asked also to provide an explanation of the approval of expanded mining activities in the Mount Tanabo area in Crescent Valley and their approval to store nuclear waste at Yucca Mountain. Chief Raymond Yowell of the Western Shoshone National Council was encouraged by the UN response and says, quote, "We are pleased the United Nations Committee is willing to look into this. We encourage the U.S. to respond in an honorable manner and to begin to work toward a solution on this longstanding matter for the benefit of all concerned," end quote. The United States assured the committee that reports on Western Shoshone issues, now far behind schedule, they were due in November of 2003, are currently being prepared. However, the community said that it regrets that the United States has not agreed to submit these reports by a timely fashion. The committee asked for a response to the question by December 31st. We will see. And one more before we take a musical break. It's a small essay piece that was sent along with a draft declaration for Indigenous peoples' rights. This one's dealing specifically with ability and disability. So it follows. With the diabetes epidemic among Indigenous peoples, said to cripple with leg loss, glaucoma blindness, renal dialysis, heart conditions, it's important that Indigenous people are able to have a voice in this issue. The Canadian publication, First Nations Persons with Disabilities, Dismantling the Roadblocks, published December 1997, tells the story of a woman identified as Margaret, a First Nations woman with a disability which causes her to slur her speech and to walk with an unsteady gait. On a business trip, Margaret was refused a hotel room. Specifically, the desk clerk told her that, quote, "the hotel did not have to provide services to drunken Indians." When Margaret tried to explain her disability, the clerk became angry and shouted at her to leave. Margaret, shaken and humiliated, and concerned that she would receive the same treatment at the next hotel, decided to return home. Already faced with the discrimination issues that non-Indigenous persons with disabilities encounter, the situation of Indigenous persons with disabilities can be significantly worse. Reasons cited include the higher rate of disability among Indigenous persons, the often enormous jurisdictional barriers which must be overcome in order to obtain even the most basic services, and the geographic isolation of many Aboriginal communities. Some Indigenous communities have only adequate, unsafe housing, a lack of potable water, no sewage system, low education, and few employment opportunities. Clearly, these conditions do little to promote healthy bodies and minds. They serve, instead, to increase the incidence of debilitating conditions and disability. Yet, when Indigenous persons are forced to leave their communities and families to seek crucial services unavailable to them at home, they must leave behind critical cultural and spiritual activities. In so doing, those who are forced to leave in search of essential disability-related supports often find themselves left feeling alone and frustrated. Indigenous persons frequently face discrimination because of race and ancestry. Histories of colonialism and paternalism have combined in a legacy of tremendous social and economic hardship, loss of land and loss of control of living conditions. Indigenous persons have witnessed the erosion of their culture, suppression of their beliefs and spirituality. When one adds disability to such a mixture, a very grim picture emerges. We will be right back We're just going to take a quick musical break.